in career terms, it's clearly enough grounds for a dismissal of the charges, just as my trial was dismissed eventually for governmental misconduct. But what people haven't really focused on, I think, is another problematic aspect of what he said. He not only was identifying Bradley Manning as the source of the crime, but he was assuming, without any question, that,
Dan, we have four seconds.
Has been committed. Hello?
We have 4 seconds, and we're going to have to leave it there, but we're going to pick it up with you tomorrow. Dan Ellsberg, Pentagon Papers whistleblower. Thanks for joining us.
Well, if you'd like to hear more than 4 seconds of Daniel Ellsberg, come to Stony Brook tonight. He's speaking at 7:30 in the Student Activity Center. And just another example of the fun things that can happen here at the State University of New York at Stony Brook. But if you want some examples of fun things that can happen in other places, take a listen to this.
Hi, I'm Bob Longman with your WUSB concert billboard for Tuesday, April 26th. Atmosphere with Blueprint, Greaves with Budo, SAB the Artist, and DJ Abilities will be at the Terminal 5 in Manhattan at 7 p.m. Balkan Beatbox will be at the Webster Hall in Manhattan at 8 p.m. The WUSB concert billboard for Wednesday, April 27th. Rusko will be appearing at Webster Hall at 8 p.m. and Yacht at 7 p.m. Your concert billboard for Thursday, April 28th. Scala and the Kalachny Brothers will be at Webster Hall in Manhattan at 7 p.m. And Stormu and Lucia Pulido and Tierra DiNati with Ray Anderson will be at Drum in Manhattan at 7:30 p.m. That's been your concert billboard for today. Stay tuned all week to hear the latest about where your favorite groups are performing and what you can be doing on the weekend. Or check out the online version of Concert Billboard at WUSB.FM.
Thank you, Bob. It's 1 minute after 6 o'clock. You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. It's time now for Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening. It's a very strange Tuesday late afternoon. If you're outside, I don't know, there's something kind of demonic about the sky out there. I'm told it's fog, but it looks like fire clouds. And I say that because it's foggy, but it's also sunny at the same time. And the fog is really high up, and it's moving fast. Yeah, it's really kind of strange. And they say this weather is unusual, and it'll be with us for at least another day. So don't be scared if you're driving around. It's supposedly normal. Yeah, as I mentioned a couple of minutes ago, Daniel Ellsberg is appearing here on campus. Very apropos. Amy was just talking to him, trying to talk to him. He didn't quite talk fast enough, unfortunately. But he will be appearing at the Student Activity Center, otherwise known as the SAC. Yeah, no end of jokes. I'll meet you in the SAC. Hey, you want to go to the SAC together? Things like that. That's what we provide for students here at Stony Brook, is easy humor. The SAC Auditorium is where he will be appearing. Doors open at 7:30 p.m. It's billed as A Night with the Most Dangerous Man in America. I guess I was out of the country when they made those posters. Free for students. Free for campus students. Unfortunately, I'm no longer a student. And I couldn't get here to get tickets. So if anyone out there has a ticket, please contact me. I'm just going to go there and try to get in. Or maybe just listen at the door or something like that. I think that's the appropriate way to hear Daniel Ellsberg talk, is by eavesdropping on it. Anyway, we're here tonight to actually conclude the show that aired last week, which actually was a continuation of a show that started on January 4th, which was a program that was pre-recorded last October in Canada over Thanksgiving weekend. Yeah, a lot of conditional phrases in there, I guess. But this is a continuation of one of those shows that Kyle and I did while we were traveling up in Canada. We were on the road somewhere in Ontario. We were on our way to Ottawa from Toronto. Actually, we were on our way back to Montreal by way of Ottawa and various other places along the way. We had gone up there just to get the smart car fixed. And you know what? I've got another smart car story, another smart car horror story I'll be sharing after this excerpt. And I think you'll find it enlightening and intriguing. But let's go back to October of last year, continuation of last week's show, where we're heading eastbound on the, what is it, the 416? No, that's the area code up there. The 410? You know what? One of those damn highways up there. And we were heading east, trying to figure out what we were doing. And we'll be back in a little while to talk live about various things happening around here. Enjoy. He's acting like, oh, it's my fault that we were going through a construction zone. This guy just passed me with dirty look and stuff. Yeah, everybody was going really slow. Everybody was going really slow, and it just opened up to three lanes from one lane. So, and the guy behind me is on my tail, too. I don't know why that is. I'm doing almost 120 kilometers an hour. All right, that's just going to have to do for now. Okay, so here we are. We're still on the road to Ontario. Actually, wait a minute. Is that a turnoff for us? We have to take the 416, that's the 401. Okay, we're not taking the 401, we're taking the 416, I believe, at exit 721.
Yeah, that's correct. I just noticed the exit numbers, and I think we have to wait until they're in the 700s.
Okay, and they're only in the 600s now. So, okay, fine, we're at 647 and 648. Somehow this is two exits. And we're on our way to Ottawa from Toronto. We've been hanging out in Canada for the last week and change, about 10 days, I guess, waiting for the smart car to get fixed, and we still don't know if it's gotten fixed or not. Hopefully it will, so we can go back to the States tomorrow. Just some impressions of Toronto that we had over the past few days. We spent a couple of days in Toronto This is something cool. This is something really, really cool. You watch a TV program. Actually, this is interesting because you watch Canadian television, and I watch Canadian television. I watch it because I have my Canadian satellite dish. You watch it because you live in Seattle and have access to a cable system that actually carries a Canadian channel, a CBC on channel 99. And it's amazing to me how few people have that kind of opportunity. We're bordering this country. You would think there'd be some interest in the media there, yet only a select few cable systems carry even one channel, whereas everybody in Canada gets to see American television. It's a shame. They have Canadian Idol. They've got This Hour Has 22 Minutes. But one program that you really turned me on to, because this is something that you were passionate about, is called, or was called, The Hour, with George Stramanopoulos. And I actually said his name right, didn't I?
Yeah.
Wow, I said his name right. And that's a thing. You can say a name like George Stramanopoulos, and we have George Stephanopoulos in the United States who does commentary, I believe, on ABC. It just shows how you can get over whatever barriers you have in your mind insofar as exposing yourself to different ideologies or even weird-sounding names. This program was an interview program. It lasted an hour. And the reason I'm referring to it in the past tense was because as of this season, it's changed to a half-hour format. And instead of being called The Hour, which obviously you can't call it that if it's a half-hour format, it's called... Wait, what is it called? I know it has his name in it. It's called what?
George Stramanopoulos Tonight.
Oh, that's it. Okay. George Stramanopoulos Tonight. Am I still saying it right? Strombanopoulos.
Strombolopoulos.
You know, I put an N in there. I went Stramanopoulos. No, Strombolop. I still need some work. But you know what? To make up for this, I'm going to spell it, just to prove I've got it right.
Strombolopoulos.
Here I go. Stromoupoulous.
Wrong.
What did I mess up?
Strom? Strom?
Yeah.
No, that's wrong. Strombo. Strombo.
Oh, I think you might be wrong on this. Is there a way to check? We have his name written down anywhere here? We'll settle this later. Not really the point. But we managed to get tickets to the show. We were in, what was it, Montreal or Quebec? We suddenly decided to check online to see if it was possible while we were up here to sit in on a taping. And usually back home, if you want to sit in on Letterman or Conan O'Brien or The Daily Show or any of that, you've got to wait weeks, months, maybe even longer, and it's a lot of competition. But here we were able to just do it. And we went to see George Stramanopoulos Tonight.
Yeah, that's actually how I got turned on to the show. I used to watch some of those other American evening programs, and because I have access to this channel, I would watch Canadian news, you know, like you have 10 or 11 o'clock news, and then this show would come on at around 11, and so when we were traveling, we kicked it around because we wanted to find out what city it was taped in, and kicking around the idea of maybe going and checking it out, and you went through and found the process to get tickets, and as soon as we got past that, we said, well, hey, let's sign up, and maybe they'll send us something back. And I'm really glad you didn't go on past experience with what you knew of how these kinds of things work, because it ended up working really well. As you said, they sent us a note right back, and we ended up getting invited.
That's really why we drove all the way to Toronto, because that was just so cool, being able to see that show. If you've ever watched it, and of course many Americans can't because, well, we don't get Canadian television, and there are plenty of good things on Canadian television. You can see it online. Go to cbc.ca, just look for George Stramanopoulos, and I said it right.
Or you can go to strombo.com.
Strombo.com, and you can stream past episodes, or tonight's episode, or whatever. And what we wound up seeing Margaret Trudeau being interviewed, former Prime Minister's wife from way back, and she had a very heart-to-heart conversation with him about her bipolar condition and depression and things like that. It was staggering to see someone who is in such a position, opening up like that and just being very candid and honest and charming at the same time. And also just seeing how George ran the show, it wasn't at all like any show I've seen. I've seen a lot of shows in the States. I've gone to a lot of tapings. He was very hands-on. In fact, when we were lined up waiting to get in, we saw him just walking back and forth, not dressed particularly formally, just basically helping people do various things, not acting like he was superior or in charge in a commanding type of way, but just kind of working with people like we're used to, that kind of way. There was no backstage. Everything was happening right in front of us. We were seeing people being prepared to go on the air and then go on to camera, but we saw them being talked to beforehand. It was really, really cool. And George was very open with the audience. It's unlike what I see in the States, where there are these barriers and walls put up. And I also extend that to the CBC itself. We basically just walk in off the street, and they were just so nice and welcoming and accommodating. Suspicion of, who are you? Who are you here to see? That kind of a thing. Just basically security people were there to help you, not to question you, not to search you, but to basically make sure that your stay was pleasant, informative, whatever it is that you wanted to get out of it. There was a museum. We were able to see some really old broadcasting equipment. We were able to see excerpts of The Friendly Giant, which is one of my favorite kid time shows. All sorts of things like that with a completely different attitude. It was so healthy, so inspirational. And look, there's a hitchhiker, and we're not going to pick him up because we're not that trusting. So that's my impression of the whole thing. It just seemed to be a theme that Canada has throughout. They're aware of security issues, and they're prepared for security issues, but they're not living every day as if it's a security crisis and we have to always be in constant lockdown mode. Basically, everybody is open until there's a need not to be open, and that need only manifests itself when there's a crisis. We don't live every day as if there's a crisis up here. That's what I got out of it. What do you think?
Absolutely. And I really enjoyed the CBC media center there. It takes up an entire block, and in the States, I mean, I've never sat in on a taping of anything, and so it was really, really cool to hear your insight about this, and then just to be able to see their facility there, it was so impressive, and again, accessible. Kind of just some of the anecdotes you've told me about how going to like a major broadcaster in New York or and I can totally relate in Seattle on the West Coast, you can't just walk in. It's all about keeping people away and separated. And you know, the media is your voice. Don't they say that's another part of government, the fourth estate? And it's important, and to not be able to access your media and have them be massive conglomerates. I mean, this is all stuff that I know very well, and I have some serious opinions about. And just the way we do it, it keeps people separate, and unless you're a who's who, you're not important enough to be able to see how it's done or to be able to access it and interface with your media. And, you know, maybe the media that is subsidized or, you know, supported by government, maybe that's not all correct, too. I'm sure there's some great arguments for that. But, boy, it felt really, really good to go into a space like the CBC and what I imagine the BBC is like, although their security is probably interesting. But just to be able to go in and participate was so thrilling, and it was so enjoyable. I absolutely would like to do it again, and really bolsters my impression of what the CBC is and what they're doing.
Well, as far as being able to participate, we actually got to talk to George after the show, and that must have been really cool, just to be able to walk up to him and say, hey, I'm from Seattle, I watch your show, and not to be talked down to, but to be talked with. Wasn't that amazing?
Yeah, he's so personable, so approachable, and I was really kind of nervous, but I also wasn't, completely starstruck or anything, because he made you feel really, human. Was interested. Obviously, he's crunched for time, because a lot of the audience wanted to get a chance to get a picture or talk to him. But to me, that made so much of an impression, so much of a difference, and really was just a really fun way to enjoy his program, and really came across as genuine. Having that, just a chat one-on-one, it's a real genuine human-to-human kind of thing, and that's just that's really impressive. You don't get that a lot, especially with people that are on TV or that kind of thing. So
to hear about his struggles getting the show on the CBC, and what he has to be careful with. Of course, he can use language that we can't use in the States, but there are certain things to consider. He was talking about why the show is not at 8 o'clock anymore, because that's 5 o'clock in Vancouver, and he can't say this particular word then at that time. And it just, we can't say that word anytime. And it just seemed very cool that he was able to basically engage with higher powers. And it goes beyond the CBC. He was talking about the Prime Minister and how he knows the Prime Minister doesn't like the show because he's critical of him. And just to have that one-on-one relationship, even if it's not face-to-face, is a really cool thing. It shows the power of free media. And this guy is just incredible insofar as being willing to interview anyone. I was talking to him about, well, why not interview Kim Jong-il's elder son, who is against the hereditary transfer of power to the younger son in North Korea. And he said, yeah, we're pursuing that. We want to get him, too. And just everybody that we could think of, yeah, they were on top of. They really want to talk to all these interesting people in the world. And it's just it's such a cool thing, because when he does an interview, and if listeners out there watch George Stromanopoulos on CBC, they'll see somebody paying attention and not making the interview all about them, not coming back with all these funny one-liners that will get the audience applauding. Yeah, he's a funny guy, and he's a witty guy, but he also is an attentive guy, and he listens, and he'll talk about the issues that nobody else will touch.
Absolutely, and it's just such a higher level of production, in my opinion, just to have a really intelligent interviewer, a guy that got his start in radio and just sort of by a couple flukes ended up hosting this show. And I don't know, it's the kind of thing that you'd like to see elsewhere. And he was asking questions, just want to know what was up with people. And I actually encouraged me to ask if it's a possibility, if it could ever come down to the States. And I thought, we agreed, it was a really interesting answer that he gave. Basically said that they go really hard. Obviously, there's language stuff and what he says, and it would obviously have to be conforming to the FCC, which we know very, very well, dear to our hearts, blah, blah. But one thing he said interesting was that he goes really, really hard on religious topics and is pretty unafraid to touch on that stuff. And he admitted it, without blinking, was like, the American networks are terrified of anything remotely religious, and he just can't go there if he knows that would become an issue, and he wouldn't be able to go there like he can up in Canada. And it's not like he's some sort of anti religion person, but just to have any kind of humor, it's just a big no-no with American networks. And I thought that was insightful. I haven't heard that. I can imagine it, but you never hear that. And that just was a moment of like, wow, we are in Canada. That is how they see us. That's a other way of reflecting, another way of looking at it. And here I go posing a question, and I got a great answer that I never would have imagined, but it makes complete sense.
that said, I really do hope that he does find a way to get on American Airways so more people can see him and benefit from that style and just what you learn. He's interviewed so many people over the years, and some really powerful people too, politicians, rock stars, actors, writers, almost anybody you can think of. So yeah, people really should be exposed to that. So after we had that bit of fun, we strolled around a bit. We had day passes for the Toronto Metro or Toronto Subway. Very low tech compared to Montreal. It was basically like a lotto scratch pad for a day pass. They scratch off the month, they scratch off the day. That's your day pass, and you show that to people when you get on the subway.
It's so bizarre. It looks like a scratch ticket. It's so funny. Like, I can't even believe it. It's like gold, that gold stuff that you would like scratch off with a quarter to see if you won.
And you know what? I still have mine, so I'm going to scratch off the rest of them and see what they say. That's probably just all the months and all the days, but still, you never know.
You're a winner, he.
Anyway, after that, we took one of the trolleys or trams over to Union Station, which is the train station in Toronto. I had no idea it was so big. It's incredibly big and used as well. Basically, there are two train lines. There's VIA, which is the passenger service that goes coast to coast, and then there's GO, which is the commuter line in Toronto. And we saw a couple of trains from each of them. The station was just so amazingly big, and there was one section that was incredibly beautiful. It was like Grand Central Station. I just didn't know they had a structure like that for trains.
I loved it. The enormous, tall, tall ceiling, huge stone columns, the name of all these major cities in Canada was engraved in huge letter type all the way around, halfway up this enormous ceiling. It was just gorgeous. It was really, really impressive. And as you said, felt like Grand Central. And also, it was very warm. It was very, very, very warm in there for something that's all stone. It was just, it was wonderful. You knew it was like the hub of travel, and very cool. A feather in Toronto's cap, as far as I'm concerned. I'd love to experience VIA myself at some point.
And we went around asking people for schedules or maps, because we like to collect those things and find out more about the system. And everybody was very open and helpful, even though they really couldn't find what we were looking for. We got into these like interesting conversations. We went to the Via Rail people who were basically checking people into a cross-country train that was going to be headed to Vancouver.
Oh, yeah.
And we walked up to one of the desks that basically was for registering a sleeper berth in one of the cars. And we asked them if they knew where we might find some information for the commuter rail. And they basically told us that they weren't familiar with the area because they were just in from Winnipeg and were heading right back out there on the next train. And this is where learning a little bit about the culture comes in handy, because I just made a reference to them saying, hey, I hope you get the Jets back, a reference to the Winnipeg Jets, who were forced to leave that town and move down to, I believe, Phoenix. We're talking about a hockey team here. And, you know, I don't really follow the sport, but I follow that much where I know that history, and I know that there are people in Winnipeg who really want the team to come back. Hockey is extremely big in Canada. I read a statistic where over 50% of the players in the National Hockey League come from Canada, and the amount that come from the United States is something like 12%, yet most of the teams are in the United States, and Canadian teams have moved down there. Quebec, in fact, had a team called the Nordiques, and they moved somewhere in the United States, and there's a movement to get the Quebec Nordiques back as well. And I just think it's so cool to have teams in Canada in a place like that, and they really deserve it.
Quebec.
Did I say it wrong again? All right, whatever. The thing is, I just mentioning that to the guy, saying, I hope you get the Jets back, it just opened up a door. And the woman standing next to him say, oh, you're making me tear up.
She was so cute. She said, oh, stop, you're going to make me, I think I'm tearing up. And he was as emotional about it. It was so, I mean, just so neat. You could tell you touched a nerve with them. It's seriously something going on in their culture.
And even if you don't share the passion for the sport, it's good to know something about it, those little bits that matter to the people that are from these areas, and that makes them open up so much more. After we went to Union Station, we stopped in a bar, and we had an amazing conversation with the bartender there. In fact, we stopped by the bar for a very particular reason. It was the night that the first of the Chilean miners was going to be brought up, and we wanted to be somewhere to watch that. And, you know, back in the States, maybe back in the States people did watch it in bars, but I wanted to be in a place that wasn't watching a game, that just had this on the TV. And when we walked in, there were three TVs. Every single one of them was on CP24, which was a it's a news network here in Canada. And we just started talking to the bartender about various bits of culture, and had some amazing back and forth with him.
Yeah, he really took to us and broke through and sort of realized that we weren't your average tourists. He needled me a little bit about, you know, asking if he could switch it to CNN, you know, thinking that I didn't actually think it was possible for CNN to be in Canada. You know, we had some good jokes. He was real personable. He ended up being an actor, and asked me some cool questions about photography and being an artist, and specifically asked me, do you prefer, are you more passionate about the art or the money? And I thought that was an amazing question. Nobody's ever asked me that, ever. And it goes along with some of the themes that we've talked about a little bit with money and how things, when you're passionate about something, as they become popular or get going, how that kind of can corrupt it, or just it doesn't stay the same way. It's not as genuine. And so he was really, 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 really nice, and was interested in this whole minor extrication. We shared with him. He talked.
Actually, he wasn't interested. When we walked in the door, we said, hey, we're here to see the miners get pulled out of the... And he was like, are you serious? Because he didn't... I don't think he knew that they were coming up that night. He said, haven't we been doing this for like 2 months now? And we told him, no, but they're going to pull them up. And we were there for, I think, an hour and a half before the first miner actually came up. But in that period of time, we just got completely engaged in all sorts of conversations about our lives and about differences in the countries and things like that. And when those miners came up, when the first miner came up, it was really an emotional event for all of us. And I'm so glad that we were in that spot at that time for something the whole world was watching.
Absolutely. Yeah, you got the sense of, like, this collective, like, sigh of relief as this miner came out and he saw his son. And, I mean, the son was bawling. And it was just so emotional because all this planning and really intelligent technology, all this really different disciplines, all these people were coming together, psychological stuff, mining technology, all the stuff that's usually used to do, you know, research or something for profit. It ended up coming together for that human reason, and you really get the best of people, the best engineers, just the way they built things and were ready to go to pull these miners out. It was just so impressive to see. And you know, I really enjoyed hearing some of the things you guys were talking about. You talking about New York and the sharing when we were waiting.
I think it was from Newfoundland. It was amazing I knew anything about Newfoundland because I'd been there a couple of times. And people are just so thrilled when you know something about where they're from. And it makes all the difference. By the way, that was yesterday. In fact, they're still pulling the miners out of the mine shaft in Chile right now. I haven't checked in recently to see what they're up to. It was, I think, 14 last we checked. So that was just an incredible story. And there's one more thing I just want to touch upon before we sign off. And that was basically walking down the street and seeing a cool-looking building and saying, let's go to that cool-looking building, and finding something really incredible inside that.
Yeah, we walked down the street. I saw this building that was just bizarre. It was very high up in the air and had these big, long steel legs or, like, tubes going up to it, and it was sort of colorful. And I said, well, let's walk down that block. I want to see what that building is.
It reminded me of the Pompidou building in Paris.
Absolutely, absolutely. And this is the kind of thing we do, you know? We see something, let's go look at it. I mean, we're there to see what we want to see. It's not some guided thing, you know? We make our own fun. And so we walked down the street, and it turns out, this building is an art design center, or a school, an undergraduate level school for artists and designers and people of various disciplines. And it was an open space for artists And what that amounted to is, yeah, I mean, of course, they had security and stuff like that, but they had an open-door policy. You didn't have to have ID. You didn't have to do anything. So we basically walked into this to this art school and started looking at some of the student work. There were students putting things up. There were people coming and going from night classes, and we were able to tour around this whole building. And mainly, once we approached the building, I wanted to see if we could get up into the higher part of it, because the downstairs is very far down. It's maybe two levels on the street level, you know, maybe one or two levels off the street. But then these stilts go up like 50 feet, I don't know, really, really high in the air.
It felt like 20 stories. Of course, they number the floors differently, but it felt like 20 stories up.
Right, it was quite high, and that became apparent when we actually took an elevator up to the top and looked out one of the windows, and it was super high. I mean, really scary. I'm not really into the heights, so it was sort of challenging to look out the window. And we actually looked out a window that was in this common area for students, and just like you would have like a study hall. There was like an open set of tables with, you know, people, kind of like looking like a cafeteria, but they were just regular tables and chairs. People were using computers, working on research, had their laptops out, you know, doing projects.
And our computers just on desks for people to use, just sitting there. Here's the thing, we were just able to walk into this building, go upstairs, ask questions, see whatever we wanted to see, and not be challenged, and not feel like we should be challenged. Everybody was very open to us. We said we're visiting from a different part of the world, and everybody was very friendly to us, including the security people who were just there to help us. Much like in the CBC, we didn't have to show student ID. We didn't have to be on a list or anything like that. That is the way it is, and that's the way it used to be in the States. And the benefits of that are just so great. We were just able to learn so much about how they do things. We were able to go into a photo lab, very much like when you work in back in Seattle, and just get so much out of it.
Yeah, that was a thrill. We got some help from the reception, and they were able to tell us exactly where the photo lab is, and we went back up and caught a glimpse of all their resources and facilities. And you know, I got to chat with a guy that runs the back desk there, which is basically what I do at the Photo Center in Seattle. And he just shared. He was an undergrad. I was talking about some of my ambitions and, you know, where I'm at. And it was just really, really cool to compare the facilities. And they had a lot of technology, a lot of computers, similar ones to what we have at the Digital Lab in Seattle, but they had a lot more of it, and obviously it was just really well maintained. They had a color printer for analog, which is very, very rare, and you know, just had various classes doing things, and it was really interesting.
Teeming with students, teeming with all kinds of people there, everybody learning, participating in one way or another, and just open and inviting and inspirational. That's what education should be. That's what society should be, and we really need to get back to that, because when you have barriers and searches and all kinds of hostile things, and there are hostile things, you get into that mindset. And then one day you walk into a building and they don't have those things in place, and you feel like something is wrong. You feel like something is missing, that all of a sudden you're not secure anymore. And that's so far from the truth. You're as secure as anywhere in an open environment like this. And it simply was amazing to see, and I thought it was incredible that we found that amazing world just by looking down the street and saying, hey, that's a cool building, let's go there. So I think that's a good way to sum it all up for what we've been doing over the past week or so.
Absolutely. It's going to take a while. I'm still processing all the things that we've gotten to do, but it was that was a really good conversation about all the real highlights that we enjoyed.
All right, so I'll turn the tape on now, and we'll start talking about that.
Are you kidding? No, you weren't recording, were you?
Well, no, this was the dry run.
Wait, that was the sound test?
Yeah.
How many hours? That was like 4 hours, wasn't it?
Well, we talked a bit, but I just thought you wanted to get it out of your system so we get it done for when we do it for real.
Are you kidding? I'm tired. I'm like, I've been talking, and this is a lot of work to do.
Well, I've been listening, and I'm tired, too.
Why do you do this? I mean, I try to talk about things. I try to be as well thought out. Do you understand that, like, there's things I miss? There's things I want to keep saying? And and you do these stupid pranks like this, just...
They are stupid, but they are funny. You got to admit that.
Are you kidding me? We've been on the road for 4 hours. Like, this is why I have second thoughts about traveling with you.
Yeah.
You know,
I've been meaning to talk to you about that, too, because I'm getting kind of fed up myself. It's the way you chew, you know? It just drives me crazy. And I can't take it anymore. And it's also the way you pronounce the letter T.
You know, I've noticed you have a clicking in your jaw. It kind of clicks.
All right, that's a medical condition, all right? It's not cool to make fun of somebody's medical condition.
You know...
All right, listen, we'll deal with our own personal problems later, but I'm going to hit the record button, and we're going to start the show now, all right, so we can get it over with, and we don't have to talk anymore.
I'm not going to say as much this time. Yeah, I've said as much as I can. Go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead. Start recording.
I'm hitting the button right now.
Would you please welcome to the stage...
Okay, all right, everybody just calm down. That's a little something from Sloan, Canadian band there. And actually, it's the theme to the George Stromanopoulos. I can't say it anymore. I was able to say it just fine when I was up there. To his program that currently airs on CBC that we were talking about at great length. And you were just listening to something that Kyle and I recorded back in October over Thanksgiving weekend up there in Canada. Yeah, they have Thanksgiving before we do, and they're thankful for different things. Let's do this. Let's give Kyle a call right now over in Seattle. Let me get through this pulsating dial tone. I dial 9 first, right? Okay, that doesn't pulsate anymore. Let's see if Kyle's home. Hello?
Hello?
Kyle, is that you?
This is me.
Hi, Emmanuel Goldstein, Off the Wall Radio, WUSB, Stony Brook.
Oh, hey, how you doing?
Oh, good, how are you? Glad you remember. We were just listening to the excerpt this week's show from when we were driving from Toronto to Ottawa.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Well, I was just making a sandwich. I was getting ready to listen to the show, and it's on in like 15 minutes, right?
No, the show was just on. The show's on now. In fact, you're on the radio right now.
What?
Yeah, no. Oh, boy, we always are miscommunicating. Yeah, the show, it's 6:43 p.m. Eastern Time. It's 3:43 Pacific Time, wherever you are out there. So, yeah, the show, it's that part's over.
Oh, wow.
And we're not recording it or storing it. It's done.
Well, it's a 4-hour time difference, right?
3-hour time difference. How many times have we had this conversation?
Well, can you hear me all right?
No, you're fine. You must be talking on one of those wired analog phones.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I must be. Yeah.
Can you hit the number 5 on it, please?
Very funny.
I'm not kidding.
You really want the 5 from this thing?
I'm not kidding. Yes, please give me a 5. Wait a minute. The whole reason I said that was I thought you were on a rotary phone.
I know. I picked up the other phone.
Oh, very funny. Okay, you got me there.
All right. So I'll give you a 5. Are you ready?
Thank you.
Here we go. Here's a 5.
That sounded like a pretty weak 5, actually.
Yeah, my dial's a little slow. It hasn't been used lately. I haven't been home, so.
Well, okay, you need to.
Kind of wimpy right now.
Put some WD-40 or something on there. Anyway, we were just talking about driving back to Ottawa, and we were up there because of the smart car having to get its maintenance done, as you're well aware.
Yes. Yes.
And I think we talked about this on the radio. That didn't end so well. I had to spend thousands of dollars just to get the computer replaced, and there was nothing actually mechanically wrong with the car. But the computer decided that, I think a month after its warranty expired, that it was going to expire too, and left me high and dry.
Yeah. But we kept it. We kept the old computer.
You have it right there, don't you?
Yeah, I do. It's under my sink.
Okay. If anybody has suggestions as to what Kyle can do with that computer, and let's keep them, clean suggestions here. What he can do with the computer, constructive things, all right, that maybe we can figure out how their technology works and reverse engineer some things, because, you know, I really think we have the right to know this. There was nothing actually wrong with the car except for the fact that the computer was refusing to do certain things. We had to drive up to Canada at something like 45 miles an hour because it wouldn't let us go any faster. And once we got up there, we were kind of at their mercy.
Yeah, this has a lot to do with a lot of issues with access and people trying to control products and you buying licenses when you're opening the box and stuff. It's all very unfair, and there's a lot of people that are interested in this whole Right to Repair Act, and there's a lot of independent mechanics and people that tinker and want to know exactly what's going on with the vehicle that they're hurling themselves across town in. So.
Now, let me tell you what happened to me last. I mean, you already know most of the story, but last Tuesday, I wasn't here at the radio station because I was at the Big Olia Dynamite reunion concert, which was pretty cool, pretty awesome.
Yeah, how was that?
It was good. It was really good, and it was nice seeing them again after so many years. And they're looking good. They sound good. Don't know if there's going to be any new material, but it was a cool thing. I met some people that listened to the various radio shows, and it was a nice scene. Kind of a weird thing, though, afterwards, this is just an aside here, on the Facebook page, there was an after party at, I think, the Hudson Hotel, and it was very nice, a bunch of us went there, very kind of posh thing, with nice seating and kind of like the sort of place that normally wouldn't let folks of our caliber in.
Ilk?
Yeah, ilk, that's the word I was looking for. So, when you say, we're here for the Big Audio Dynamite after party, they just open up the little gate there and let you in. I don't understand what the purpose of it was because, well, the band wasn't there, and most of the people in this bar weren't from the concert. So I guess when you have a concert, you can just say, okay, guys, go over to the Taco Bell on 13th Street, and that's where the after party will be, and all these people wind up going there, and maybe they get a cut of it or something. I'm not really sure. Maybe every week we should have the off-the-wall after-party at a random place in the country.
Well, I don't know. Maybe it's just, like, for enthusiasts.
Maybe.
Sort of like the people that are willing to continue, and they ravel it into a different party with different people.
Yeah,
even
but
in honor of, but it's just not really the same.
They were playing different music. It was different people.
Previous party.
Yeah, I don't know. It was interesting. But anyway, so I'm going off on a tangent here. So I was at that concert, and I noticed I had parked my car downtown. I was staying in the city that night. I parked the smart car downtown. As I walked by the smart car, the lights on the smart car started to flash very rapidly. And I said, oh, look, the smart car's happy to see me as I walked by. In actuality, apparently I was brushing against the key in my pocket. And the thing that's different about it flashing rapidly means that the battery in your key is running down, and you need to replace that battery. All right, so basically, I tried to get into the car at that point. It wouldn't let me in. It wouldn't let me into the car because all the key would do was flash lights. It wouldn't unlock the door. Fortunately, though, you can actually insert the key into the back hatch, open that, and as soon as you do that, the door is unlocked. And at that point, I figured, you know, everything's okay. All right, fine. I'll just get the battery replaced next chance I get, but I can get into the car. Problem is, I couldn't lock the car after that. I couldn't figure out how to lock it. It was left unlocked on the street for a full day until Off the Hook was over. And at that point, I figured, okay, I'm just going to, you know, head back to the island now, and that'll be that. So when I got in the car and actually turned the key in the ignition, this little icon flashed up on the display, icon of a key. And that's some kind of anti-theft thing. And the way to get around that, you have to hit the lock button on your key to prove, I guess, that you actually have the key. Problem is, I didn't have enough power in the key to send the signal from pushing that button. And every time I pushed the button, it would just flash rapidly. I couldn't get the damn icon to go away and to convince my own car that I wasn't trying to steal it. So the next, literally, 4 hours I spent going from place to place in the city looking for a replacement battery for the inside of my key, and nobody carried that particular battery. It was, I think, a CR-1225 or something like that. Nobody had it. I even found a 24-hour Best Buy. 24-hour, you'd think that would be Mecca for something like this. No, they didn't have it. They didn't have it at all. So I basically just gave up and wound up taking a train all the way out here to Long Island to look for my spare key, because I knew I had a spare key someplace. I wasn't sure, though, because when we went up to Canada, we had to get the car, what's the term, rekeyed?
Rekeyed.
Yeah, because they changed the computer, and it took them 3 days to get the right code so that the key would match the computer. And I wasn't sure if I even brought the spare with me. I still don't know if I brought the spare. So I wasn't sure if that was even going to work anymore. So I was really kind of losing my mind, and I was also trying to figure out how to find the actual battery.
Right.
It turns out the next day I woke up, made a bunch of calls, and found that Radio Shack carries this battery. So I raced over there, got a couple of batteries, and then took my old 1993 Tercel, a nice old-fashioned mechanical car, into the city to try and get the smart car started to see if... because, you know, I had to worry about alternate side parking and cars being towed and things like that. It's Canadian plates. All kinds of complications could arise.
Yeah.
And I replaced the battery. It was easy enough to replace the battery in the key. But my worst fears were confirmed. When I went up to the car with a new battery and pressed the button, the same thing happened. The exact same thing, where the lights flashed rapidly. So something was wrong with the actual key. And, yeah, I was fit to be tied. Then I tried the spare key, and I figured, you know what, the spare key is probably not going to work, because I don't think I had that with me when I went to Canada. I'm not really sure. I hit the button on that, and there was a pause. Then I heard the click of the car unlocking. And that meant that I could actually use that key to turn the car on. That's what I did. Left the other car in the city, because I knew I could get that started if anything happened. But I was very worried about the smart car. What if that key decides it's low on battery, too? Then I'm locked out of my own car. This kind of stupidity is the norm these days with computer-controlled cars. I just cannot believe it that something like this could happen to somebody. You know, it's your car, but yet you can't start it because something is malfunctioning in this high-tech world. I still don't know what's wrong with the key. I don't know how to replace that key. We're working on that right now. But, wow, what a nightmare after all kinds of other nightmares.
Yeah. Jeez, it's pretty unfair, you know, having done this, everything you could right.
I was trying to hack the car. I was trying to figure out, how can I fool this car into thinking that the door was locked properly and that I'm using the key the way it should be used so it doesn't flash that stupid icon at me? And everything I tried just, nope, I was defeated at every turn. One point, I even, when I was going through all the manuals and things like that, I found a spare battery. They include a spare battery in there.
Right.
And I can't believe it. I just walked around the city for 4 hours and there was a spare battery in my car the whole time. But when I put that in, again, the same thing happened where it just flashed rapidly. I figured the reason for that was because that key was from the battery was from 2005, so maybe it had worn out too. But apparently, even new batteries don't work in the key. So I've got to figure out what's wrong with it or figure out how to get a new one.
But that's great, right?
What's great?
It drives great, right? The car.
When the car actually is able to be started, yes, it drives just fine, but there are so many little hoops you have to jump through. And I'm just not used to that. You know, I'm used to, you have a key to the car, you turn it, it starts. I'm willing to take the risk that somebody else might be able to figure out how to do that themselves than get locked out of my own car like this due to logic and computer programming and stupidity like that.
Yeah, it is pretty hostile. And, you know, that's only, like, first or second generation. They've got, like, many generations of different immobilizers and ignition interlock stuff. That's different, but it's the kind of thing that's evolved a lot, and they're able to control it, but they're not empowering people at the same time, and it goes beyond stuff that's in like a service manual or something that you can get, like material and stuff on the particular vehicle. Yeah, they're reserving parts of the repair information for dealers only, and that's just...
Well, here's the thing, Kyle. This car has Canadian plates. It's a Canadian smart car. American smart car dealers don't know how to fix it because they don't have access to the same computer that the Canadian smart car dealerships have access to. That's why I had to drive it up to Canada to get it fixed in the first place.
Right.
So now, let's just look at a theoretical possibility here. What if the other key dies, my car is parked on the street, I can't get the thing started, I can't, you know, the new battery even doesn't work for whatever reason, I have to somehow get a new key. A friend of mine was telling me, yeah, you know, you might have to drive the car to Canada to get them to actually program the key again. What happens if the car can't start? Do I have to have it airlifted out to Canada to get the thing? I mean, it's just insane, the thing, the possibilities that I'm looking at here just to get the thing to turn. There's something seriously wrong with both the way that company does business and just the technology in general where something like this is even possible. I mean, you can't hotwire a car anymore. This is America,
I mean,
you know?
Run, like, completely a standalone, separate ignition and electrical system and just, like, throw a bunch of, like, the most important wires on top of the existing wiring harness
mm-hmm.
and just sort of have it, like you said, hotwired. And, you know, basically run separate wires over it and completely delete and just leave it in the car, but leave it separate and unplugged, like the original harness, just separate it and leave it unplugged, and then just run the basic stuff to, like, deliver fuel and turn on when you turn it on. But, you know, you want it to run as much with the computer and that kind of system as possible, because when you start customizing it, you have to get into, like, how it works and
right.
You have to really baby it, I think, more than just, you know, what is reasonable for someone who's just trying to commute, you know?
Exactly. Listen, Kyle, unfortunately we're out of time, but it's great hearing your voice again. And we have plenty of things to talk about. You want to give a very quick summation as to what it's like to be back in Seattle?
Oh, wow. It's really cool. People have been really excited to see me out here. And the weather's been kind of all right, and I've been bicycling a little bit and trying to get some fresh air for spring here. I've been processing some film. I got some cool pictures from some of our trips, and I'm learning about digital negatives.
So all right.
I can print better digital prints. But I'm also looking into, like, more film stuff, and I don't know. I've just been able to... enjoy the holiday here and work on different projects. I don't know. Still helping you out with some stuff, and we got a lot of exciting things going on this summer and next year and the year after. So
absolutely,
I'm just
absolutely.
Taking it slow, taking it a little bit as I go, and listening to the community around me, and I don't know, having fun.
Well, that sounds wise. And, of course, we'll have you on again to talk about things more in depth. But it was great reminiscing about the Canada Exposition and various other adventures we've been up to, and looking forward to the ones in the future. We also have all of Europe in the winter that we did, and that will come your way as radio shows in the future, probably when we're off gallivanting someplace else. But, again, Kyle, great hearing your voice again. Miss you already. And we'll talk to you again soon, I guess.
Thanks for having me.
All right, take care.
Everyone.
Good night.
I wake up and wonder where I've been in my dreams. In the shadow of what it says.
a little, I think I get a better feel. When no one tells me why I should think or feel, it ain't hard. It ain't hard.
It don't do.
Before there was WikiLeaks.
Damage control in high gear. It's far from over for the U.S. after WikiLeaks releases thousands of secret U.S. documents.
Before Julian Assange.
You're right. We are subverting illegitimate authority. The question is whether the authority is legitimate or whether it's illegitimate.
And before Bradley Manning.
He's the Army private who allegedly leaked the collateral damage video and the State Department cables.
There was Daniel Ellsberg. The man who leaked the Pentagon Papers and changed a war.
I think I served my country better when I was telling the truth to my fellow citizens than when I was keeping my mouth shut.
The Stony Brook Press and Stony Brook Graduate Student Organization invite you to a night with America's most dangerous man on Tuesday, April 26th at 8 p.m. in the SAC Auditorium. Pick up your tickets at the Student Activity Center box office. Monday to Friday.
I am prepared to answer to all the consequences of these decisions.